Hello and welcome to episode 79 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig, the Australian.
And I'm Derek.
This week, we'll talk about the brand new Essential phone, Sundar Pichai's closing comments at Google I.O., an HBO show meets the real world with the democratization of the internet, and finally, a brand new Patreon campaign. And no, it's not for us. Without further ado, let's get started.
So Derek, you're up first this week.
Yes.
What have you got?
So I was on vacation all week. So most of the tech news this week pretty much passed me by, but this one stuck out. This is news of a new phone called Essential, or actually the phone that is being made by Essential. I don't know if the phone has a name, if it's just Essential phone. Either way, guy who started or created Android, Andy Rubin, has started his own company called Essential, and they have two products. They've announced a phone and a home-based device, and the phone was just announced for pre-order this week, and it looks really cool. It's a phone that I have that actually strikes me as something different than things that other people are, you know, are announcing. Like even the last Galaxy phone was cool, and like it's
albeit
pretty
gimmicky.
Yeah, Samsung always has something gimmicky, but there's nothing like incredibly new about it. Like most of this stuff is getting to be expected for phones nowadays. The super wide screen is something that is, you know, fairly new to the field, but it's very iterative. There's nothing like, oh, that's very interesting and different. But the Essential phone is very interesting in that it has a very interesting connector to it. I'm saying interesting a lot, but it is interesting. So it has like a 2-pin connector on the back for, I'm guessing, power. It's magnetic. You can clip accessories onto it, and then it uses wireless data transmission in order to communicate with said accessory. And it has, and it ships with like a 360-degree personal camera, which is very different. Anyway. The technology behind this is pretty cool. It has a screen that even goes around the camera. Like the screen takes up so much of the front of the phone that like it wraps around the camera. There's no logos. It's very, you know, high design driven.
Minimalist.
Yeah, minimalist. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this phone. Is this something?
Whoa,
you would buy?
Look at that price tag.
Yeah. Actually, it's not so far out there. I mean, if you're looking at an iPhone, that's about what an iPhone costs. Off plan. I mean, that's unlocked.
Off plan, yeah, that's fair. I always forget that they do
that. Who the heck buys phones off plan anyway?
Oh, I do.
Well, now you kind of have to.
Oops.
Because when you do the iPhone upgrade program, for example, you're paying for the full off-plan price. It's just spread out over 3 years or whatever, or 1 year or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Maybe it works differently too in the US because it's, I don't know. I've always found it better to
do it on plan
than off-plan. But anyway.
So what are you guys' thoughts?
What do we think about this phone?
Yeah.
Well, so the new thing, Derek, is the 360-degree camera.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did you say is like brand spanking new?
Well, the huge screen. It just takes
but
a
that's
very...
not revolutionary.
No, it's not revolutionary. It's something different and unique and something that may actually come out. Like,
so you're talking about edge-to-edge screen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
well,
gotcha.
Edge-to-edge screen and the accessory deal. Like, that's kind of the big thing with this phone.
Yeah, that's fair. That is pretty interesting. I don't know. It seems like we've sort of plateaued on innovation as far as phones go.
It's absolutely
like true. You can only do so much with a glowing rectangle.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, exactly.
Well, they could make it a different shape, but it won't fit in your pocket as well. So
could go full like a triangle, like in the office with their pads.
That's got well, like, you know, that's got symbolism implications.
That's true. A conspiracy theorist would go crazy on that one.
Yeah, I agree with Ben. I think it sounds interesting. I am interested in the 360 camera. I wonder how long it will take Apple to poach that. I'm sure they'll have to call it something
maybe
different.
Next week. Who knows?
Maybe.
Probably
Ooh,
not.
Ooh, foreshadowing WWDC.
Probably not, but I don't know. Derek, are you going to get one?
Am I going to get one of these? Well, I don't have money for a new iPhone anyway. The thing is, I am so stuck with iOS because I love iOS so much.
He's an Apple fanboy.
I just can't go to an Android phone. There's nothing that would compel me to do that yet. But if I did get an Android phone, and I feel like I do this every time a new Android phone comes out, it's like I would totally get this one.
So I would get the Google phone, and the clock is ticking for Apple to make something worth keeping me.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ben, I feel like you're increasingly becoming the type of person, or maybe you always have been, who just likes to throw down these ultimatums. Like,
ultimatum. Boom. Like, good
I
luck,
am
Apple.
I'm quitting the internet. I am switching from Apple.
I wish there was like an air horn sound every time I threw down an ultimatum.
Hey, that can pew, be pew, 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 pew. That can be arranged. I have editing power.
Oh gosh, please don't.
If I get a soundboard, it could be even better.
Imagine if we had a soundboard, this podcast would just descend into a mess, I think.
I've been researching them. Don't tempt me.
Uh-oh.
So anyway, I actually thought this phone at first, before we go too long on this, I thought this phone was, like from what I was hearing about people, I was hearing the term modular thrown out a lot. And as we all know,
does it fold in half or something?
No, like you can add things to the phone in order for it to do different things. Like there was an initiative that Google was trying to do to make a modular phone that you could like snap in and out a camera or snap in and out a bigger battery. And there was another product too that was, you know, they were trying to do that. And both of them failed, not spectacularly, but they just kind of faded away. So I was coming in prepared to dislike this phone because of the supposed modularity, but this is an interesting way to do modularity. Just one port, you can choose one extra special thing at a time. I don't know. I'm interested to see if this goes anywhere or if this just doesn't take off because most people don't care.
Do you know what I'd like to see? I don't know if this already exists. Are there phones that have 3D cameras yet? I haven't seen that, but like 360 is cool, and it's probably even more has more use cases, I guess, in day to day life.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be pretty cool, I reckon, to be able to have some kind of 3D camera system that doesn't require glasses. I think whoever can crack that egg is gonna be doing well.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple of phones that came out with 3D cameras and then that faded away because nobody cared.
But that
I'm
was
sure
probably because you
needed
special glasses, right?
Well,
were they like
yeah,
old style 3D? Or?
I don't know. But anyway, we should probably wrap this up so you guys can talk about stuff. Let me see who's next. Who's next, Ben? Ben, what do you have for us to talk about?
So you guys talked about Google I/O briefly last week. Craig brought the topic about AI helping with medical things, prolonging life particularly. And I thought that was really great. And I noticed the thing at the end of the whole keynote, you know, in sort of signature style, the CEO gets back up on stage, in this case, Sundar Pichai, and wraps up, here's everything we covered today. And then he has his little closing remarks. And I just, as I was watching the supercut, I noticed that they included one of his closing remarks, which really stuck out to me. And he said this, "I believe we are on the verge of solving some of the most important problems we face. That's our hope. Let's do it together." And I was just really surprised by that comment because I don't think we're on the verge of solving any of the most important problems we face because I think the most important problems we face are suffering, death, and evil. And I don't think we've gotten any closer to solving these things as human beings in and of ourselves because they're the result of sin in the world. And I just think from a worldview perspective, I could see how someone might say that. But I think from a Christian worldview perspective, it just kind of sounds crazy because we haven't done anything to prevent death. We haven't done anything really to prevent evil in the human heart. We certainly have seen
change occur and us sin in different ways, but we haven't seen any measure of less sin or something like that over the last multiple thousands of years. Mm-hmm. It's just a facet of the world we live in and the effect of sin on it. I was reminded of, and I think I've talked about this before on the show, Billy Graham did a TED Talk once, which is kind of interesting in and of itself because he's not the kind of person you'd expect to do a TED Talk, but it was really good. And he talked about this very thing that, you know, all of our advances in technology in the last few years have done nothing to prevent suffering, evil, and death, ultimately, and that only one thing can prevent those things, can finally end those things, and that is faith in Jesus Christ and a restored relationship with God and each other as a result of his work on the cross. And so, I mean, I don't know if Sundar knows that. He probably wasn't thinking about any of that when he said it, but I couldn't help but think of it when I heard him say it. I think it's important for us to recognize those things when they are said, because it sounds nice, but is it true? What do you guys think?
I agree. I think that's similar to sort of what I was saying last week, although I probably wasn't as explicit about it. I guess I found it interesting that they were, that's what I was saying about the language they were using around the idea of, you know, if we can just think hard enough and have enough data, we can solve this problem. And I think I said that the reason that we have, like, the reason for the problem, the Christian worldview gives that reason, which is sin and corruption and evil in the world, and therefore there's a consequence of that, which is death and decay and suffering. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't work towards improving people's health and things like that. We certainly should, but
no, of course not.
Yeah, I thought it seems like you've got all these really, really intelligent people, and there is actually an answer to the question that they're asking: what's causing these things, and why is it such a big problem for every single person in the world? And Christianity provides an answer, but they don't necessarily want to get it from Christianity. They want to try and figure it out some other way. That sort of was interesting to me. I guess that's kind of why, one of the reasons I raised the topic last week.
Yeah, and I appreciated your comments last week, Craig, for sure. I heard you talking specifically about the medical AI stuff they were talking about, and mm-hmm. I think that was a great and relevant topic in and of itself. I was just noting that Sundar's comment was, we're on the verge of solving our most important problems, and we can only do it together, and that's our hope. That together we can solve these problems. And it's just like, that's such a worldview comment to me. They did talk about medical things. They did, I suppose, graze the subject of suffering and preventing it or prolonging it. Actually, that's the wrong word.
Alleviating life.
Prolonging life. But they didn't talk about evil or death at all. And I don't think you could make an argument, really, that Google has done much to thwart those two things. I mean, death is just a tricky enemy, right? And there's only one man who's ever beaten death, and his name is Jesus.
Mm. I guess it's because they do, at the fundamental level, they deal with tangibles. They're dealing with technology. They're dealing with things they can program, and they can't program good or evil. At least, I mean, they can create things that do good or evil, but those are things that are, they exist in our world without humans intentionally creating them. And so I would imagine that's where the major worldview distinction comes from, is they don't want to have to think about, when I say they, I mean people who are unbelieving tech enthusiasts, whatever, don't want to have to think about things that they cannot control, that are already existing outside of their control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is evident that they're really looking at the symptoms as the root of the problem instead of the root itself being the problem.
Well said. Well said.
And I hadn't thought about that until you brought it up in that context. But
I've been listening to a lot of Popcorn Theology lately, and I'm trying to not be a mindless consumer. So things like that stick out to me more and more because those guys are having such an effect on my life. I would just, on a final note, mention, you know, specific to the topic of evil, technology is never going to be able to give a dead heart life. Only God the Holy Spirit can do that. And so we should seek him and plead with him to raise sinners to new life that they might know Jesus. And I would just say, this is one of the reasons it's so important and good to be a believing tech enthusiast.
We have a new sponsor this week. We are proud to welcome Valley Vintage Shop, where you can get well-priced homemade household products like soap, beard products, and more. Father's Day is coming up pretty quickly, and if you have a bearded fellow for a dad, Valley Vintage is a great place to get started for finding gifts. Even if your dad doesn't think he needs beard balm or oil, he probably does. I have a beard on and off, and I just figured everyone had to deal with a little crazy when it comes to a long beard. Until someone told me that beard balm was a thing, and that changed my life. It really makes beard maintenance easy. Oil makes your beard nice and soft, and if you have an especially rambunctious beard, the balm tames those wild hairs and makes everything so nice. Valley Vintage also has mustache wax and combs, so they've got just about everything for starting your beard maintenance. They've got a bunch of different scents too, including unscented options if scents bother you. Valley Vintage was born out of a family's need for good, all-natural soap and hair products, so everything they make is all-natural. To get some to try for yourself, or to get for your dad, again, great Father's Day gift, head over to valleyvintageshop.com and get 10% off your order with our promo code TECH. And thanks to Valley Vintage for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation.
Craig, I think you're up next.
Well, I think I am, because Tank's not here, so it's not me. It's blank space and crickets. All right, so this week I'm going to talk about an article I came across on Wired. It's got to do with HBOs. Did you like how I said HBOs, Ben?
I did like that. Thank you.
One time I said it incorrectly, and Ben just took me to the cleaners for it.
No, not incorrectly.
Wait, I'm having trouble understanding. Do you mean, like, HBO? Is that what you're talking about? I don't...
Okay, I made a mistake one time, you guys. Come on.
Oh, no, anyway. I actually prefer H. I like the sound of that better. Kind of like...
No,
Zed.
Well, that's incorrect.
You know,
it is H.
But...
The queen would say H. Anyway, you know, let's not open up old wounds. So, this article is talking about the TV show Silicon Valley, which basically, I've never watched it, but it seems like it's a whole bunch of startups vying against each other. Maybe it seems like kind of The Apprentice or something, some reality show where they're trying to get money for a particular project or something.
It's
or trying to be the best.
It's a sitcom or something. It's not, well, not a sitcom, but it is fiction.
Oh, it's fiction.
I believe, right?
All right.
Or no.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say.
Right. Okay. I should watch it before I talk too much about it. Anyway, the article just kind of begins there and then kind of sort of uses that to raise an issue, I guess, or raise a concept. And so they're talking, it says that in the show, startups promise to change the world by tackling silly, non-existent problems. But this season, they're tackling a project that really could change the world. And so there's a team called Pied Piper who are supposedly trying to create a new internet that cuts out intermediaries like Facebook, Google, and the fictional Hulu. Their idea is to use a peer-to-peer network built atop every smartphone on the planet, effectively rendering huge data centers full of servers unnecessary. So that's directly from the article. And then the article goes on to say, you know, hang on, isn't the internet already sort of something that no one owns and something that anyone can contribute to? People can publish whatever they like. And obviously that is the case to an extent, but there are companies like Facebook and Google who, and also Amazon, they use the example of when Amazon's servers went down and not just their store is affected, but anyone who hosts anything on Amazon servers.
Yeah. That,
which is a huge,
that was a dark day thing on the internet. Like, it was surprising.
Exactly. Yeah. Sort of a whole section of the internet just kind of shuts down and people go, oh, this thing isn't exactly, you know, infallible like we thought it was. Mm-hmm. And then they actually reference someone I know who is an Australian computer scientist who is a doctor, a PhD in computer science, works at a university in the city that I live in, who back in 2010 was basically with a team, launched this thing called the Serval Project. They may have launched it before that, but that's kind of when they're talking about this media came about. So, Dr. Paul Gardner-Steven helped build Serval, a decentralized messaging app that can spread texts, and it actually also got to spread phone calls as well, in a peer-to-peer fashion without the need for traditional telco carriers. I guess my question is this kind of technology something that is actually a good thing? Is it a good thing to be trying to sort of subvert the big players and get to a point where we can be almost have what you'd call, I guess, like a self-sufficient internet where people's devices can sort of link together? And I almost have this image of, you know, the uprising of independent citizens coming up against the big telcos and through linking technologies like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, creating systems that will allow the transfer of data in whatever form that is without needing to go through, you know, a Telstra or a Verizon or a, you know, a, some kind of telecommunications chain that's powered by a big company that's just in it for lots of profit. Is there sort of moral, ethical, economic benefit to that, or is that just kind of trying to do something that ultimately is a waste of time and isn't actually good for the internet in the long run?
Well, I guess I'll start off by saying this is fascinating to me, and I was just talking about this with my brother while I was on vacation. He brought this up as like something that's actually a thing out in Germany. Like there's a whole subnet that, I mean, it's not connected to the internet, but people can communicate across this mesh network of devices like that. And I mean, I'm all for this. I think this is totally a good thing. The problem with the internet as it exists right now is the huge companies that are essentially filtering the internet. There was an article that I saw someone post, or it was a blog post that someone posted or something, about Facebook and it's basic, it's basically just against the open internet in that it doesn't let Google or any search engines categorize any or catalog anything that's on Facebook. Like you cannot find a Facebook status via Google. You have to go to Facebook and find the status there. So when people are, you know, posting information there, that is Facebook's internet. That is not, you know, the open internet. Mm-hmm. So these huge companies are starting to centralize the internet to some extent, which if you think about this, like as a government, in real life, like you're starting to see small dictatorships rise up around the internet, and decentralizing that, I think is awesome. There would also be, advantages to having peer-to-peer networks such that like, There are parts of the country that are just never going to get cell towers because there's so few people out there. But if you make it affordable to put a bunch of mesh points out there, like people can just go put mesh points out there and, or like people driving by can be part of the internet, you know, it would increase the ability to, get internet access to those people. I just think this is an awesome idea.
I am going to walk back slightly something that you said, at least in my own personal opinion. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of benefits from walling off certain portions of the internet. So I don't know if you guys are familiar. You guys are probably familiar with. I don't know if everybody listening is familiar with the dark web.
Yes.
I don't want to see what's on the dark web, and I'm glad that Google has hidden it from me, so to speak, right? I mean, I heard a pretty staggering stat once that we really only see and have access to like 3% of the quote-unquote internet because of things like the dark web that are actually the majority of the internet. And so these, for people who aren't familiar, these are things that aren't indexed by search engines, so you can't get to them from Googling. Right. So for all intents and purposes, it's basically hidden from us. We can't really access it unless we really, really, really try. Because for most people, the front end of the internet is Google. And so if it's not on Google, you can't see it. Or like you just said in the example of Facebook, if it's not in Facebook, you know, you can't see it, so to speak. Right. Which there are cons to that you've well just summarized, but there are also pros. Like I don't want to see child pornography. I don't want to see it intentionally or accidentally. I'm glad that Google has hidden that from me. I'm never going to go looking for it. And so I don't have to worry about accidentally finding it because Google is indexing it or something like that. So there are, I would say, positive aspects. And even like when I think about, I don't have any kids right now, but when I do, I will appreciate the fact that they can't get to those things, from Google or Facebook or whoever, right? Mm-hmm. So there are definitely some positives to that. I realize maybe some of what I just said is contradicting to net neutrality. But I don't know if I can come down hard line on either side of that because I see pros and cons to it. Not to net neutrality, but to the, not having access to things like the dark web.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, net neutrality would be talking about the people serving up the internet, not the internet companies
right.
themselves.
That'd be more ISPs than.
Yeah. But philosophically, you might be right that there's a little tiny inconsistency there. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's an interesting thought.
It might be worth it for us to do a deep dive on either the dark web or net neutrality from a philosophical perspective, because there is some overlap there, like you rightly said.
I think it's something that's just of interest to me. It has been for quite a while. Maybe it partly because I know someone who's been involved in some of this stuff, but also just, philosophically, is it, you know, big companies have a right, I guess, to create big companies and be capitalists and, try and control what they create, the platforms they create. And so I guess there's, like, from an ethical standpoint, they have a right to do what they do as a business. And if people buy into that and use it, then so be it. At the same time, if they start to sort of push certain agendas or skew what's true and what's false, and through some of the fake news stuff and whatever, some of the other things we've talked about, I think then it can become kind of, you know, there's reasons for and reasons against on both sides. So not something that I have come up with a clear sort of mindset on either way, but just something I thought would be worth chatting over this week. Ben, did you have something else you wanted to talk about before we go?
I am bringing two topics this week, which is slightly breaking the rules, but this one is smaller, and it's because Tank's not here. There is a brand new, relatively new Patreon campaign. If you don't know what Patreon is, it is a crowdfunding sort of thing. Kind of like Kickstarter.
It's like an ongoing crowdfunding, right?
Right. Yeah. More of like a subscription model than a one time. But Shylin, do you guys know Shylin?
Yeah.
He is like my favorite artist in terms of Christian hip hop.
On my phone.
Yeah. And he's back at it again. His last album was put out 3 years ago. And he's been on Facebook and now Patreon a couple of times to talk about it. And he's getting back into it. And the music industry has changed so much with the advance of streaming services like Spotify in terms of how artists can make a living. So he's trying new things, and Patreon is one of those things. I just signed up today, actually, to support him in that, because he has blessed me a ton in his music. I think he's taught me more theology than maybe anybody else, just because music is so powerful in that. And so I'm on board, and just wanted to shout it out to listeners who may be interested, that you can jump on board the Patreon campaign for Shylin and support him in making new music.
Cool.
Do you guys listen? Craig, you do.
Yeah, I do. There's one song of his that I have to skip every time it comes on in the car because it just almost gives me a headache. But apart from that song, I really like his stuff. He's incredible, the amount of truth that he can pack into, a 3 minute, 3.5 minute song. I certainly appreciate what he does, and would be interested to see the next chapter.
I think the new album's coming out this summer, and I think it's called Still Jesus, which I'm pumped about.
Nice.
Did you say what the URL was? Sorry, is it just
Patreon.com/Shylin, and it's in the show notes.
Yeah, very good.
So that's all we got for this week. And I think, Derek, you've got some follow-up from last week.
Yeah, so I just wanted to shout out to Alex Humphrey from The Rugged Marriage, saying that, you know, correcting some of our some of my misunderstandings on what WannaCry is. He went through a very nice list of, like, you know, explaining exactly what it is, what it affects. It affects far more than XP. It affects, like, Windows 7, 8, Windows Server 2008, 2012. He explained exactly what it was, all sorts of stuff. You can go into the Slack and check that stuff out. There was some great conversation on that this week, so... Yes.
Alex is a good friend of the show, yeah, and we really appreciate his helpful feedback on that. He's in the InfoSec world, so he obviously knows more about it than we do. But we're happy to learn together through all this stuff. And so if you want to learn more about what WannaCry is, jump in the Slack channel, sign up at slack.techreformation.com, and visit the episode discussion channel specifically, and you can see Alex's comments on WannaCry and some discussion about it.
Mm-hmm. We've also got some great feedback on the new format. Thanks, guys. You guys are awesome, and we're glad to have you as listeners. So,
absolutely. And if you're new to the show, you can follow us on Twitter at Tech Reformation. We're always listening. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back.